Last week, Emmanuel Macron promised to stand by Lebanon. Everything must be done, he said, to prevent this country so close to France from once again being drawn into war. And he warned Israel to back off. Israel, he said, must refrain from any ground intervention or large-scale operation on Lebanese territory. But Israel has ignored the president, mounting a ferocious aerial attack on Lebanon, blitzing Beirut and moving troops across the southern border. For the seventh time in the last 50 years, Israel has troops fighting in Lebanon. To discuss Macron's role in the war, we're joined once more by Sophie Petter, Paris Bureau Chief for The Economist and a regular guest over the years on Late Night Live. Sophie, welcome back.
Thanks very much for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to have a conversation with you, David.
Thank you. Is there really any possibility that French forces might find themselves facing off against Israelis?
Well, I think what you need to do is put it in context, and that is Emmanuel Macron has, since the beginning of this Israeli-American war on Iran, said very clearly that he is going to respect his commitments to defend allies and partners in the region. And that applies to a number of countries. It applies to places like Qatar or the UAE, where France actually has a military base. But it also applies to Lebanon, which has a very long history with France. So it is in that context of defending Lebanon, not in entering a war, not in entering a combat role, that France is reinforcing. It already has soldiers in a UN operation in southern Lebanon, reinforcing its support for Lebanon. And the chances are that, you know, France will become more involved in that. But it has been very clear that this is not an offensive combat operation against Israel. It is to defend Lebanon while Israel strikes at the Hezbollah's positions in southern Lebanon.
What is this bond between France and Lebanon? I mean, Lebanon is a largely French as well as Arab-speaking nation, isn't it?
It's really interesting how close France and Lebanon feel to each other, you know, even in these sort of very post-colonial times. It was, of course, a protectorate, French protectorate after the First World War. And France at that time set up a number of institutions such as French lycées, where French was taught. France became the official language of Lebanon at the time. And it ever since has maintained that link. It hasn't ever really rejected France in the way that other former French territories have done. And it's almost sort of an emotional link. Macron put it that way once, that he feels that France's attitude towards Lebanon, it's part of a shared history. There are a lot of Lebanese people in France in all sorts of positions. I mean, there are, you know, major TV and radio presenters who have Lebanese origins. Mm. And that is, I think, a very strong link that remains to this day. There is a particular responsibility France feels towards Lebanon.
Has it ever come to Lebanon's aid before? I mean, as I was saying, Israel's troops are in there fighting, you know, virtually every decade.
Well, France participates in the UN mission to defend southern Lebanon, which is called UNIFIL. That is a UN operation, not a French operation, but French troops take part in that. So it has always committed to Lebanon in that respect. I think what you need to see is that, you know, for example, there was an explosion in the port of Beirut a few years ago, and Macron was the first outside leader he flew straight there to show support. It's those sorts of gestures that suggest that France is prepared to defend Lebanon when it comes to any attacks on its territorial integrity. And that, I think, is what you're seeing at the moment as well, with this decision by Macron to send armored vehicles, for example, in defense of Lebanese territory.
And the Charles de Gaulle aircraft carrier, etc. But what practically can France do? I mean, if Israel simply ignores Macron and does what it's always planning to do, you know, occupy a great swathe of southern Lebanon, etc., 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 what can France actually do?
A couple of points I think we should make. One of them is that the Charles de Gaulle aircraft carrier is indeed on its way to the Eastern Mediterranean. It happened to be in Sweden a few days ago when Macron ordered an about turn, and it had to go all the way down.
That's
around
a
the
mighty
West Coast.
Voyage.
Oh my goodness, isn't it? Just take a look at a map and you see it had to go all the way around the west coast of France, through the Straits of Gibraltar, into the Mediterranean. And it's on its way. It should be there any moment. That is not just about Lebanon. That is about having the presence of an aircraft carrier with all the kit that it comes with. It has, you know, over 20, sometimes 30 Rafale fighter jets on it. It has helicopters. It can act as a support for any operations that France wants to conduct in the Middle East and the Gulf region. And it, don't forget that France has already, for example, taken part in the defence of the UAE. So it has had fighter jets shooting down missiles that have been sent from Iran to the UAE. So this isn't just about Lebanon. That's the first point. The second point is, and you're absolutely right, you know, what can France do? It's a defensive move. France has been on the phone and through Macron's, you know, diplomatic attempts over the last few days, all over the region, trying to talk to people to try and, you know, dial down the temperature, find a way out of this conflict. France by itself, of course, can't do anything. It's not going to go in, you know, head-to-head combat with Israel in Lebanon. It's just not about that. It's about defending Lebanese, you know, interests from these missiles that are going in to try and attack Hezbollah in the region, in the country. So, you know, France is not the country, you know, that a country that has the clout to be able to do anything by itself. But I think in that context, it's also interesting to see that Macron's not just acting alone. What he's tried to do, for example, with sending the Charles de Gaulle aircraft carrier, is make this a European effort. So it's supported by naval vessels from Greece, from Italy, from Spain. This is about trying to, you know, make sure that Europe has a role, and that Europe's role is about diplomacy, it's about defense of territorial integrity, and it's about trying to sort of bring an end to this conflict, which is essentially an American and Israeli conflict.
Macron also had instructions in the statements he's been making over the last few days, instructions to the Lebanese government to sort of get off its arse and deal with Hezbollah. But that is an unreal request, is it not? I mean, the Lebanese government has been, for one reason or another, unable to deal with Hezbollah for a long time.
It absolutely has. And, you know, just because it has had problems for decades with defending its own territory, it doesn't mean that I think any French president, and we're not just talking about President Macron here, we're talking about presidents over the years. If you remember Jacques Chirac, president in the late 1990s, early 2000s, had an incredibly close relationship with Lebanon. It is something that the French have tried to help Lebanon bring about. Lebanon's been an incredibly unstable, it's a sort of one wonderful country in so many respects, but very unstable politically, very difficult to govern, very difficult to, enable it to have its control of its armed forces over its own territory. And France has not by itself, and it's very difficult to do that, managed to help it sort itself out. So yes, it isn't something that is going to happen overnight. This is, you know, yet another push from France to do something, but it's, you know, in a volatile region, in a complicated country, it's something that isn't going to happen overnight.
On Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm speaking to the Paris bureau chief for The Economist, Sophie Pedder, about France and the war in the Middle East. Sophie, you mentioned a moment ago that the French aircraft carrier making its long way from the Arctic to the Eastern Mediterranean is part of a European operation. And Macron seems to be presenting himself now as the kind of principal defender of Europe. And last week he spoke about a new nuclear policy for France and Europe.
That's right. It's very interesting because the speech that President Macron gave about a nuclear deterrence was long planned. It was something that was going to take place before the Middle East crisis and the war on Iran. And that, I think, took on a greater significance because of the timing. What he essentially announced, you know, as you know, in France, French has a nuclear deterrent and so does the UK. Those are the only two countries in Europe. It is a conversation that a lot lot of Europeans are having at the moment, which is due to a lot of uncertainty about the American guarantee and the nuclear umbrella that America has extended to the whole of Europe under NATO since the Second World War. There are a lot of countries in Europe that are very concerned that they wouldn't be protected anymore, that America isn't as committed as it was. And those countries include places like Germany. So we're talking really serious, big players in Europe. They are now having conversations with France about whether France can in some ways use its deterrent to sort of think about all of Europe's security. And that is what Macron announced in his speech a week ago. So that's come as a huge source of interest for a lot of Europeans, for the Swedes, for example. Macron listed a whole load of countries, including Poland, the Netherlands, Belgium, and others that are interested in this alliance and are going to take part in this alliance. It means for them, because they don't have nuclear weapons, supporting French exercises, nuclear exercises with conventional weapons. But that's... The significance of that has obviously become all the more important due to the crisis in the Middle East, because there is this sense that there is just such a lot of geopolitical uncertainty. And therefore, if France can step up, if it can provide some sort of real security leadership, then that comes as a source of reassurance for a lot of other Europeans.
But under what conditions could France use a nuclear weapon?
Well, obviously, the use of nuclear weapons is something that you do not ever want to actually do. The part of the whole point of deterrence doctrine is that it is to deter. It is not about using them, but it is about the ultimate deterrent. And that is that to make sure that anybody, any adversary, enters into their calculation the possibility that France could use its nuclear deterrent. And it's all about that's the context in which it should be seen. In other words, what you're trying to do is raise the cost to any adversary of any potential aggression. You're talking in Europe, obviously, about Russia. If Russia has already made its, you know, twice now, and it continues to do, has made its attempt to annex Ukraine and has annexed part of Ukraine, but that's what the war is all about. Yeah. But what if it did that again? So the whole point is, if it was trying another part of Europe, any other region, any other country in Eastern Europe, which will feel vulnerable, the point is, if the French deterrent is seen not only as there to protect France, but to protect other European countries, if that raises the cost of an aggression to Russia, that could put Russia off from doing that. That's what this is all about.
Is there perhaps a sense of relief amongst European leaders that they are taking the defence of Europe so much more into their own hands?
It's interesting, that question, because President Macron for years has been saying that this is what Europe needs to do. You know, ever since he was elected in 2017, he talked about how Europe had to stand up for itself, it had to do more to defend itself, it had to rely less on America. And for most of that period, the last 8-9 years, most other Europeans have just ignored him because they felt very safe with the American guarantee. They never really felt there was anything to worry about. And in the last year, since the re-election of Donald Trump, the conversation has changed so dramatically. It's quite fascinating. And also for France, I think in some ways it feels vindicating, although they're very careful not to say so, that this is now the conversation that Europe's having. So it does feel that Europe is now pretty much aligned on the idea that it has to do more. It's a very complicated thing to do because, you know, Europe hasn't spent enough on defence over the years, conventional defence. So there's a lot of capability building that has to take place. But I think it is interesting that finally that whole kind of discourse that France had about strategic autonomy, about European autonomy, is beginning to be taken seriously. It's a long-term project. It won't happen overnight, but it is something that is beginning now to take shape in Europe and even among the most Atlanticist countries, none of whom want to cut the link with America. That's not what this is all about. It's about a sort of hedge against American disengagement.
Is this stand Macron is taking giving him fresh regard in France? Is this admired?
The polls suggest that it is. He's starting from a low base because he is very unpopular in France. And he is, on the whole, much criticized by, you know, left, by the right, by the extremes. He has nonetheless regained a few percentage points in polls, suggesting that the French do like this. They like the fact that France is acting abroad, is respected abroad. I think, you know, it's interesting, things like sending the Charles de Gaulle aircraft carrier, the images of that, they're very powerful. You know, when they show those on telly and you see this sense of France being able to kind of project power a long way from home, and that long journey we were describing all the way around to the Eastern Mediterranean, at the same time as, you know, the UK's aircraft carrier haven't got anywhere close to the Mediterranean yet. I think that does give people a sense of pride in France, and that reflects in some respects on President Macron. It's not going to boost him to a point of popularity. He remains, you know, still an unloved president, but it has certainly helped restore some respect for him in France.
How much longer has he got?
Well, the French presidential election takes place next spring, so a European spring. So that's April, May, and that means he's only got little over a year. But, you know, the kind of person he is, he's someone who is absolutely going to use the time he has to do what he can. And you've seen that with things like this change in the nuclear deterrence doctrine, in his attempts to play a role diplomatically in the Middle East, or however difficult it is. I think you'll see the same. You know, he'll probably be a president who is more active and present in international affairs than at home, because home is so difficult for him. But he absolutely isn't going to give up the remaining time he has. And I think you'll see a lot more attempts, at least, to provide some sort of leadership for France and for Europe in the remaining time.
Does Trump rate him?
Well, who knows who Trump rates? I think they have a respect for each other. They have known each other a very long time, because don't forget that during Trump 1, President Macron was already in office and they knew each other then. They have a certain respect for each other. They also, you know, President Macron has been one of the European leaders who has been perfectly willing to stand up to defend France and defend European interests when he felt that they were undermined. And that obviously irritates Trump.
Yes.
So it's a sort of, I would kind of, you know, prickly but respectful, fundamentally respectful. One thing that he does do is they answer the phone to each other. I mean, if Macron rings Trump, Trump picks up, and obviously vice versa. So they have a dialogue. Trump takes it in turns to humiliate different European leaders, and Macron's certainly been on the receiving end of that from time to time. But, you know, that doesn't faze Macron. He keeps going, and I think that there is a relationship that is fundamentally respectful, even if prickly, at, you know, periodically prickly.
Sophie, thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
I've been talking to Sophie Petter, Paris Bureau Chief of The Economist.